It's a 3 o'clock on the Fan. Ed Coleman, Gary Myers here. Done a lot of football today, some baseball as well. And we'll get back to the calls in a bit, but we're going to turn our attention to baseball now. I think he made it back from Las Vegas okay and in one piece. David Lennon of Newsday, their fine columnist there. Dave, Eddie C., and Gary Myers here with you. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I made the mistake of staying in Vegas for an extra night on Thursday.
Did you?
Maybe a little sluggish on the uptake this afternoon, but I'm getting there.
Well, how much did that cost you financially to stay an extra night?
Well, I balanced it out by taking the Chargers on Thursday night, incredibly.
There you go.
That's a good move.
Yeah, nice move.
So that wasn't looking good for 3.5 quarters, but after that, the Philip Rivers, I think he's having a for real season right now.
Here's what you got to always remember, okay, Dave, a little bit of advice. When in doubt, in a big game, bet against Andy Reid.
Good point.
What about the short week and KC being a tough place to play? I guess that didn't factor in, huh?
Well, it did for the first 59 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
Right, that's true.
Now, you're
good
right,
point.
Too, Dave. The Rivers is having one of those seasons, too. We were talking about that before. He's been fun. He's fun to watch. Really is. This had to be, you know, it's funny, watching the winter meetings. I wasn't there. We're watching from afar. It had to be a little bit different. You've covered both teams in town, but, you know, in particular with the Mets, it was always, well, we'll bid on a free agent. We didn't quite get there. That's too bad or whatever. To being front and center pretty much, you know, for the entire winter meetings as to what was going on. It had to be a little bit different feel for you.
Yeah, they were big on controlling the narrative, Eddie. You know, you've been around the Mets for a long time, and this was not a case of them just kind of sitting back and waiting or just doing things with half measures. This was Brody Van Wagenen wheeling around the casino and adjoining rooms, sort of like the Tasmanian devil, and trying to get as much done as humanly possible. You've seen him. You've heard him on the interviews. You've seen him on the videos of it, and yeah, he's something. You know, he's getting things done, and you know, when he says he's wearing people out in the back room, what other people have said in their dealings with him, it's legit. And you know what? Just taking notice. They like the fact that he's out there trying to do stuff. You know, everybody in front offices, they don't want to stand pat. You know, they want to go out there and make moves, Jerry Colville being at the very top of that scale. But, you know, I think what they like, what even other people, observers, kind of like what the Mets are trying to do. And, yeah, there is a lot of effort, and there was out in Vegas for sure.
David, let me ask you this. How would you compare your feelings of a deal for Realmuto getting done before the meetings, right after the meetings, and maybe going forward now? Do you think there's a better chance of it happening after what you heard in Vegas, or are the Mets going to have to move on to plan B?
Well, they're trying so hard that I think there is a good chance of it happening, Gary. That's kind of the short answer to it. Only because I think, as we've seen from Brody so far, you know, especially in looking at the Diaz and Cano move, is that when he gets fixated on something, he wants to find a way to get it done. And I may not agree with the end result here. I didn't like when Syndergaard was being thrown around in three-way trades to potentially do that. But there's been so much smoke with him and Realmuto, and he seems so determined to get him. And the other part, Gary, you know, frankly speaking, is that, you know, the other choices off the market cost more money.
Right.
You know, they're free agents, and they're going to take multi-year deals. So, yeah, I'd put the chances of the Mets still going after Realmuto and getting him, I would still say they're pretty high.
Ultimately, what do you think they're going to have to give up? We've heard Nimmo, Eddie and I were talking about whether you'd include Rosario in there. I didn't think that would be a great idea. Do you think they can get this done with Nimmo and a prospect?
I think that's possible. You know, there's a lot of other teams involved here, and we'll see how much. You know, I think it's about half a dozen in the last time I had checked in on it. And, you know, you have to wonder how much other teams are going to have the stomach for it. I mean, is this to go to a place where the Marlins feel like they didn't get enough back in their other deals and they need to make an example here with Realmuto? Or are other people going to bow out and say, hey, you know what, we're going to find another option here? The Mets would kind of love to do this with an outfielder, like Nimmo and a prospect or two. If it goes to Rosario, there's some willingness there too. So, you know, these people are in play. And the fact that Syndergaard keeps being mentioned all the time, that's one to look at too. Something just doesn't really seem right with that equation.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me too, Dad. I just mentioned it before 3 o'clock that, you know, the Marlins have not loved trading in the division. They traded Ozuna, St. Louis. They traded Yelich, Milwaukee. I know they'd prefer he go elsewhere. I'm not saying that they wouldn't do it here, but it'll be interesting if one of those other clubs outside of the division comes close to a package that the Mets have, whether they would go that way.
I agree with that, Eddie, in the sense that I think that's true for any team. Nobody wants to trade somebody to go see that player, you know, 19 times a year. Doesn't really make a lot of sense. And if you can find a similar package outside the division, I would say a team's going to take that every time. Yeah. I mean, there really has to be a toll paid in order to move a player inside the same division as that team. And we'll see how high that is up. Now, like I said, if these other teams decide they feel like they have to move on a free agent instead and bow out, that could change that. But as long as they can keep five or six teams involved here, then they can push the Mets up another notch higher. I think a team like the Braves or somebody trying to stay in or push that would be, you know, they can kind of mess with the Mets to some degree to push the price up.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if that does wind up being a toll for the Mets as well.
David, I cringed at the signing of Familia because what sticks in my mind are the three blown saves in the World Series, losing the game
of course.
In the wild card to the Giants, all those blown leads in the ninth inning. You can lose a game in the eighth inning as easily as you can lose it in the ninth inning. So the fact that they only plan for him to be a setup man instead of the closer doesn't ease the pain at all. 3 years, $30 million for a guy who's literally tortured Met fans for years. What am I missing here? Why?
I understand the visceral reaction, Gary. It's going to be tough for, you know, seeing him back in a Mets uniform. I know for Mets fans, that's going to be tough. The stomach, you know, as you know, there is a big difference between being a closer and a set man, and you don't quite have that pressure, and he's going to be closing games, so take some relief in that. He's a younger option on the market. There's a lot to be said for that. He's a proven guy in New York, you know, despite the playoff saves that he blew. Not all his fault, I might add it, as you well know, too.
Yeah, I remember a ball going through Daniel Murphy's legs.
Oh,
We can't pin those all on Dries. But, listen, Gary, I think there's a lot to be said for a guy that's proven himself in New York. And he has, over the longer term, when healthy, been a pretty good performer here. And I think moving into a setup role, especially as a guy back-to-back with Diaz, is going to be a big help. So, listen, I think the market's going to get kind of crazy there, you know? So what we would think as a 3-year, $30 million deal for a setup guy would be kind of nuts. I don't think you're going to see that when you see what some of these other guys sign for.
David Lennon, our guest from Newsday out at he was at the winter meetings, of course, their baseball columnist. We're talking about the Mets. Before I ask you about the Yanks, one thing about the Mets, Dave, you know, I've always, and listen, they don't have to announce the budget. Everybody asks all the time, what's the budget at? What's the budget at? Especially with the Mets. And they haven't said anything publicly, nor do they have to. But I've always had the sense that, you know, they would love to stay kind of in the area that they have been in the last 2 or 3 years or so. And, you know, in other words, if you go out and get a catcher like a Grandal, if you have to pay for somebody like that, there's probably not going to be a center fielder. If you can get a Real Muto, maybe there is a center fielder. Maybe the bullpen is now done with the addition of Familia. Is that the sense that you get or the same kind of scenario that you see?
That's the frustrating part, right, Eddie, about being a Mets fan, is that you have to choose all the time, you know, that it has to be that it has to be either or thing, you know. So I think, listen, when you say the area they'd like to be around, you're talking obviously about the $155 million range where they've kind of bit the past few years. You know, I tried to get that out of Brody at the winter meetings and said, hey, does Familia take you out of not only the reliever market, but other free agents at this point? Does that affect how much money you have to spend beyond that? To which he quickly said, and to which always puts me on guard as well, it's not always about money in improving the team. And I'm like, okay. When you say it's not about money, it's about the money.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He definitely said, I would love, you know, if the Mets could go out and get another shutdown reliever, spend there, to go get a center fielder like Pollock, to go get another catcher like a Pollock, and just blow it out, because there's a real opportunity here with the rotation that they have. And with the structure of a lineup right now, they'd be a contending team if you spend some money in the right places. And I don't like the choosing. Yep. Frankly speaking, you're right, Eddie. I mean, I think it does come between deciding between getting a center fielder in Pollock or a catcher like Grandal, or even to a lesser degree. I don't think you're going to see all those spots filled by free agency, at least the top free agents. And that's the part, like I mentioned, that's frustrating.
David, I was going to ask you to switch to the Yankees. Are they done with the starting pitchers trading for Paxton and re-signing Happ, or do you think they still need somebody that can be closer to the top of the rotation?
Yeah, I, there's part of me, Gary, that doesn't think they're done. And again, that's another question that I asked Cashman out the meetings, you know, the Happ thing. And it was like, hey, does this, you know, effectively take you out? Well, he wasn't official then, but I was saying, would something like that take you out of the pitchers? And he said, no. You know, we're always kind of looking at other things. And if he sees a name, if the Kluber talks or Bauer talks or if Bumgarner comes back up, even if we don't think that's the case, I don't think he's going to move until more like a mid-season trade. The Yankees are going to be in on it. I mean, they're going to pay attention to this stuff. They have the chips trade for another big front of the rotation guy, true number one, if you will. You know, they have kind of 3 1-A's right now in Paxton, Tanaka, and Severino. So if there's a one that's going to be available, I think Cashman is going to very much explore that, even while they do have a framework for a good rotation right now.
There's been a lot of no's, not so much from Boris's side, but there's always been a lot of no's from the Yankee side of things. But I keep having that vision of a big left-handed bat at Yankee Stadium and Bryce Harper and you know his desire and all that kind of thing. Where are they on that? Can you turn the page on that definitely, David, or is there still something to that, something simmering down below?
Well, I mean, to take you through the timeline of how these winter meetings, Eddie, we went on the first day of saying, of Cashman saying, you know, I'm surprised you're still asking me about Harper. We have enough outfielders. He did mention Ellsbury in his list of outfielders, by the way.
Right.
And then by the end, he was saying, well, you know what? We're a fully operational Death Star, meaning that they were capable of doing any big move or blowing up any planet whenever they felt like it. And that was after Boris had kind of called them out on the carpet and called their bluff. The percentage is really low, Eddie. I think what their priorities are right now are adding a bullpen arm and really making a play for Manny Machado. I think he's very much in play for the Yankees. That's where their money is going right now. If some things change, I think they could always pivot to Harper. But for right now, and I agree with you. I mean, that left-handed bat in Yankee Stadium, especially for a lineup that's very right-handed, yep. You know, especially with Didi out now, mm-hmm. could do some serious damage. But I really put Harper as kind of a back burner guy. And listen, Machado and Harper are going to be staring at each other into mid-January as their agent tries to outdo the other, looking for like $2 more than what the other guy's for. So I wouldn't expect a quick resolution to that in any sense.
Yeah, I think you're right.
From what I remember, David, before Ellsbury ran into the wall in the middle of the 2017 season, mm-hmm. I thought he was playing much better than he had at any other point during his Yankees career. Has too much time passed, and has he had too many injuries since then to ever expect him to be a valuable and productive contributor to the Yankees?
I mean, that's a good observation, Gary. I mean, he was a very productive player before that collision. And there were, and Boris had said throughout that season in conversations with Cashman that was really kind of a lingering thing. That with his numbers, you know, never returned and he was never the same player. It was all because of that. It was all things stemming from that. And last year he was just kind of stashed in Tampa and, you know, he had these numerous injuries that kept popping up. And you have to wonder, whenever a player in any sport just gets a year older and especially has been out of the mix for a while.
Right.
You have to wonder. Now, I just thought Ellsbury was going to be kind of a throw-in for the Yankees, that they could move him somewhere, maybe package him with another player that somebody wanted, because you have to have your doubts at this point. But I mean, Ellsbury, when healthy, can be a productive player. I mean, they always disparage him for so long now because he's been out of the mix for a while. But this guy was a very athletic center fielder, you know, that could provide you some speed on the base pass. Out of the mix for so long that people just can't even count on him anymore. So I wish I could tell you I knew where he was headed or what he could do, but I don't even think Brian Cashman knows that right now.
David, good to have you back in town, and recover from Las Vegas, whatever you have left to do, okay?
My pleasure, guys. It was fun joining you.
Happy holidays,
thanks,
David.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.